If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Listen to this. This is from Michael Sokolow in Slate. Last week, Michael Newman began his Media and Cultural Studies seminar at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee with a simple question. How many students were watching the Beijing Olympics on TV? One hand went up. Then he asked how many had seen videos from the Beijing Games on YouTube or social media. Almost every hand was raised. He goes on to say, yeah, viewership of traditional events are down, but he also said that it's possible the 2022 Olympics will be one of the most watched events in U.S. history. Michael, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Seriously, how is that possible? How can it be both?
Well, actually, you know what's funny is it's probably the most watched video production in world history because of the way the Chinese government was airing it. But within the United States, The metrics on the social media are just astounding. I mean, without even going into TikTok, Instagram, other platforms that NBC was partnering with, when I just did back-of-the-envelope viewership on YouTube of Nathan Chen and Camila Valieva and stuff, we were at 30 or 40 million views.
Of their videos on a single platform, is that what you're saying?
Right. And just single videos or actually cumulative videos of theirs. So in other words, we're in the hundreds of millions and eventually going to get to the billions of social media views from Beijing.
I shouldn't go down this road, but I got to tell you, one of the thoughts I had when I was reading your piece was, this sounds like Donald Trump and Sean Spicer after the first inauguration or after his inauguration, when they said, well, I don't know how many people watched it on TV. They said it was the most viewed thing ever, and they were counting the sort of difficult to assess social media platforms and extra views, and this sounds a little bit like that.
Feel free to check me on it. It's not like YouTube hides these numbers. The real numbers, the really gigantic numbers I've heard, but I haven't really calculated, are TikTok. NBC had an exclusive advertising pre-roll deal with TikTok, and I don't have a TikTok account, but even on YouTube now, it's definitely over 100 million at this point.
So then what do we make of this? I mean, I'm not a TV network. I guess I don't care what the ratings are. The point is I get access to this stuff as a fan. What's the fallout from the different ways that people consume the Olympics?
The fallout is that there's this gigantic cultural change we're all experiencing that nobody's talking about, right? So you look in your newspaper and you hear the TV ratings are way down and nobody's talking about the Olympics, but then you go to work and when you chat with the person in the next cubicle, you're talking about Nathan Chen or the Russian doper or everybody is watching them, but nobody's admitting it really. And we're going through a new media transition, and one of the points of my piece, I study Olympic broadcasting and Olympic media, is that the Olympics are always about the future of media consumption. So in other words, in 1936 in Berlin, they introduced television. In 68, Mexico City, it was color satellite live TV relay. You could find in every Olympics the kernel of tomorrow's media consumption. And I really think Beijing, even more than Tokyo, Beijing was a real turning point where we'll look back in 20 years and say, oh, yeah, that's when I first started really looking at stuff on my phone instead of on TV.
And would we also say that our attention span is different? We don't sit in front of the TV for 3 or 4 hours, maybe the way we did in decades past. Now, I'll just go watch the Michael Chen thing tomorrow. Everybody's talking about Valieva. Oh, I'm just going to watch that 3-minute video tomorrow. I don't watch events the way I used to. I wonder if this Olympics will signal that.
Right, but you actually conflated two different things. You've conflated attention span with on-demand, with user on-demand video accessibility. So in other words, what you just described in the second thing, oh, I'll go watch it the way I want to watch it, is that's the real question. And we're seeing this. I'm not so sure I buy the attention span thing because of the numbers that Netflix is doing for movies, you know, and stuff,
and
the numbers that Peacock did for streaming. I think people will select stuff and sit and watch it, but the real difference is people are saying it's time shifting. I'm going to watch it at my convenience.
And it was a, I don't know how you would say what kind of Olympics it was, good or bad, dramatic, not dramatic, but there were some great dramatic stories told, unfolding, and I think the network actually told them pretty well. How did you assess NBC's performance?
The Olympics are really a sui generis. They're really their own thing because there's no other, except maybe NFL football, maybe live sports and some, there's no other real program production that's fully staged like a theater. Like, you know where it's going to happen, you know where to put the cameras, and then it's totally suspenseful. So it's really the best of both worlds in that sense. And I think NBC did a pretty good job from what I saw, but I didn't watch that much television, to be honest. I was one of the people checking it out on YouTube. But it's a very difficult thing for me. I think the big irony that nobody anticipated was the evil aspect of the Russian doping and the Chinese dictatorship actually drawing people to it. You know, I mean, if you say Tokyo Olympics, all people remember is Simone Biles not participating. But now if you say Beijing, you say the Russian doper or China's dictatorship. So I think those storylines actually helped NBC.
Yeah, this isn't about that, really, but That's the conundrum for an NBC. I mean, you're not the partner of China, but they're the host country. And normally they like to put a bow on these packages. And yet I noticed at the beginning of the NBC coverage, the second interview they did 2 weeks ago, and at the close of the coverage last night, they had these two scholars on about China. And they said, rather than open the world up or build bridges, this Olympic actually showed how far apart we are and did nothing to mend the cultures. I actually would have preferred them do a little more of that, but they at least acknowledged that at the beginning and end.
I agree. And I mean, they couldn't. Could you imagine if they didn't? I mean, it was the responsible thing to do. The question is, did they do enough?
Yeah. But back to, though, the viewership patterns that we have. So I take your point, and I guess I'm agnostic about it if I'm happy or sad that a lot of people are watching the Olympics on their devices and maybe not in real time. But if the bottom line is what's the interest in the games, I think you're reminding us, if nothing else, that it's still very high. People were consuming it, right?
I mean, that's my sense from my social media feed, from talking with my friends. But, you know, I love the Olympics. But, you know, I don't know about your listeners. I don't know, you know, in Chicago, if this was the same kind of thing, if you got that kind of atmospheric cultural sense that a lot of people were talking about it. But I did.
And the ratings then for NBC, they were down from previous games. Do they lose money then on this?
No. I'm laughing about this because NBC would like you to think they lose money. They would like you to think there's a problem here because their rights are up for renegotiation in 2028. The Olympics are the second most profitable broadcast in traditional broadcasting behind the NFL. The Rio Games made over $200 million in profits. We're not talking about revenue. We're talking profits. Tokyo made over $240 million in profits last year. And these come from Comcast's earnings calls, not NBC. NBC is owned by a cable company called Comcast. You know, these are provable things. The Olympics are enormously profitable, but if NBC were to go out and publicize this, that they're getting such a great deal, they're going to hurt the negotiation in 2028. But essentially, they're ripping off the IOC. They're making a fortune.
No kidding. Well, then, my goodness, and I think a lot of us always feel really bad for the poor little old IOC, what with them being good, honest brokers of the game. So I don't know that I'm rooting for either side in that case. 773's texting in. I could personally watch the Nick Baumgarten story over and over again. He was the 40-year-old snowboarder who got one last chance at an Olympic medal and won the gold in the mixed pairs coming down the hill with
I remember Lisa the snowboarder. Start with a J, but I forget.
All right, everybody look up Olympians with a J in their name. It's really a pleasure to talk to you, Michael. You can read this piece that I saw in Slate. He's a media historian and the director of the McGillicuddy Humanities Center at the University of Maine. Michael, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.